woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Happy to be serving you on the Michigan Talk Network, being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. Do not hesitate. Make sure you have your rifle, your shotgun, or whatever it is, all set and ready to go, equipped with what you need from Not Just Guns, or maybe get yourself a new firearm, maybe one of those new AR platforms that you can use down below 57, or just whatever it is you need, ammunition, everyday carry stuff, tactical stuff. It's all there. NotJustGuns.com is where you can go, and Wednesday nights is their auction night, so don't forget that as well. Want to thank our friends over in Davison, Michigan at Conquest Sense, and our good friends at the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. Links to all those fine folks on our website. And I want to take a quick second to say a couple of things. First and foremost, happy birthday to my brother Mark Farner from Grand Funk Railroad, turned 73 this week. And it seems like just the other day he was turning 60. So now he's 73, still doing a fantastic job out on the road. And my favorite Flintoid. Now my nearest closest favorite Flintoid is my friend Lance Valentine, who joins me right now. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. That's pretty good. I think he's probably one of the most famous non-athletic Flintoids. Is definitely probably Omar. You know, we went to the same high school.
Did you really?
I graduated. He didn't, obviously. But yeah, we went to the same high school, Flint Crosley High School, in Flint. Absolutely. We were at the same high school. He actually, Donnie Brewer, actually played men's league hockey with my dad.
Really?
In Flint when they were big time. So yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Connection there with Mr. Farner.
That's the only guy I haven't met from the band. I've met Mel Shocker, and I've met the short time guy there, Frost, Craig Frost.
Mel and
Craig.
I'm drawing a blank. They played men's league hockey, and they played on a team in my dad.
Oh, very cool. Brewer had to be like 8 feet tall on skates with hair coming out of the helmet.
Right.
But I was up in the Petoskey area visiting Mark and his beautiful wife Lisa here recently, and what a great couple, man. Very happy to call them friends. And the reason I'm kind of bringing you in on this thing is because it was like 13 years ago this week you and I did a little show out in the parking lot, which means
isn't that amazing? It's funny. 15. That picture actually popped up on my Facebook page the other day, so I don't know exactly when it was, but I either saw it. As a memory that popped up, or I might have thought I was going through some old sorting. You know, I spend about a half hour a day sorting all my old pictures, right? Because I need a lot of those pictures for some of the seminars I do. And so the other day I came across that picture sitting in the parking lot. Actually, I think we talked to Farner that day. I think Farner was actually on via remote while I was actually there. I remember talking to him during the break. So, yeah, I do remember that. That was kind of a long, boy, I looked a lot better then.
Boy, you and I both, buddy. there's a lot less gray all over my head. And you know, I mean, here we are. This is 15 years. And I just went across the hallway to thank Brock Palmbush, who is my long time friend, my very first producer. And as I was telling my current producer, Nathan, I said, dude, you're like the fifth producer in the history of the show, which in this market, in this industry, that's like almost unheard of.
Yeah, that's. I know how many guys I've worked with over the years, and you know, Mike Avery, one of the other guys I do a lot of stuff with. You know, he's had Charlie forever up there, but yeah, it seemed like Brock was around forever.
For like the first 5 years, I think.
Yeah, it seems like every time I answer the phone, talk to you, it was him. So yeah, it's kind of yeah, kind of weird. But it's 15 years ago. Holy moly. Yeah,
I can't believe it, dude. I really didn't think we were going to last 15 minutes, to be perfectly honest with you. But you know what? When I scrambled around, when I got the okay to do this show, I realized how much I didn't know about the outdoors and quickly surrounded myself with the people that do. And our very first guest was Ted Nugent. We had Ted Brooks from Brooks Archery down in Kalamazoo, which Ted had fallen on some health issues recently, and we're hoping and praying the best for him. My good friend Bob Miles, who then was with Martin Archery. And then show two came the second week. It was Mark Farner. Mark was supposed to be on show number one, but Ted Nugent had to fill in, as odd as that is, because Mark had a scheduling conflict, but we had Mark on the second show. But, man, I look back, Lance, I look back at everything, how you have changed from Walleye 101 to teaching fish and how the things have morphed for you from a regular, you know, the walleye boat to the pontoon boat to crawler harnesses to crankbaits. I mean, everything has been a learning curve in process, and everything's been different. I mean, it just, nothing has stayed the same, which is beautiful.
Yeah, I would sure hope anybody that's listening today that was listening 15 years ago does not hunt the same, fish the same, trap the same. I hope that over the last 15 years, you know, people have learned. You know, you've had a lot of great people on your show, especially that fishing guy from Teaching Fishing. He's awesome. you've had a lot of great guys on your show talking about the outdoors, and you know, obviously things have changed. And if you're doing the same exact thing you were doing 15 years ago, when you're fishing, hunting, trapping, outdoors, anything you're doing, I miss the boat, because every time you're in the woods, every time you're on the water, it is definitely a time to learn and kind of question what you're doing. Am I doing, you know, is this right? What I should be doing different? What are some ways I could catch more fish? What are the ways I could do everything better? So, yeah, if guys are listening, they were listening 15 years ago, and they're doing the same exact stuff, pulling out Uncle Joe's Hoochie Whopper every year time they go fishing, they might want to double check their fishing and make sure that they actually are kind of, you know, staying up with what's going on and some of the changes that have been made. Look at, if you went to Lake Erie 15 years ago, or Saginaw Bay 15 years ago, or Detroit River 15 years ago, and looked at the water, and you went today and looked, it's completely different. The water color has changed. We've got some invasive species that weren't there. The whole food chain has changed. It's different, right? It's different. We still have great fish populations in most of the Great Lakes, but things have changed. You know, we don't fish exactly the same. I was talking to a guy the other day about, you know, he said, why don't we fish Erie Deeries anymore? I said, well, because, you know, the walleye schools on Lake Erie aren't 2 miles long by 3 miles wide anymore.
Right.
When that water was dirty and looked like, you know, as my friend always described it, you know, the water on Lake Erie and Saginaw Bay looked like Mountain Dew. It had that green, you know, gross tint to it, and the fish were closer to the surface. They were in much bigger schools, and you could just drift and cast a lure that went down 6, 7, 8 feet of water and catch a bunch of fish. Well, now these fish are deeper. They're in smaller pods. You have to stay on these small pods to catch fish. You can't just randomly drift or troll throughout the basin and catch fish the whole way. You got to be much more precise with your depth control, which means casting is not the most efficient way to do it anymore. So not that those things were wrong back then, and what we're doing now would have worked back then, but things change. Things absolutely, you know, evolve as we go, and the outside changes, our habitat changes, the fish change, the bait fish options change, the food chain changes, and we just have to adapt with it.
Lance Valentine from Teaching Fishing joining us here on Wild Michigan. 15 years, man. We now have, Lance, we now have a whole new generation that has grown up with this show. I look, I know I'm being the old guy right now, but you know, it's just because I'm so pleasantly surprised that we've lasted this long. I really am, because this has been, would have been, without you guys, a very short, boring show, and I've said that a lot of times, but I've learned tremendously, just huge amounts from everybody that's been on this show since day one, and we're going to talk more and learn more with Lance Valentine, Teaching Fishing. So hang on, Lance, if you don't mind. I appreciate it, and thanks to each and every one of you that have dropped by the podcast, the website, or anything. to contribute to this show. It's been greatly appreciated. We are celebrating 15 years on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here and celebrating our 15th anniversary of the show. It aired the first time on September 30th, 15 years ago. I'm not going to do the damn math. I'm too old for this crap right now. But when you think about it, when you think about when we first got Lance Valentine, you could have got like 8 episodes for a penny on album 8 track or cassette. I knew I shouldn't have done that.
How true is that, though?
I'm about to pass out because I held that in too long. Excuse me. But I mean, like you were saying, what brought that to light was in the break, Lance went from, you know, his very first show, in-person show 24 years ago, to doing everything virtually via computer now. I mean, he had DVDs for like about a minute, but everything being virtual now.
Yeah, you know, like I said in the break, you know, I literally made my whatever small reputation I have and my ability to make a living in this business, I made it by getting in my car, driving, and standing in front of any group of people that would listen to me. And like you said, you know, I'm always surprised when somebody comes to a seminar. I'm really surprised when I see them come back. Because I know one day I'm going to stand up. Here's what I know. I know one day I'm going to wake up. I'm going to be 26 years old again. The alarm's going to go off. I'm going to have to put a tie on and go to my job at the bank. And this has all been a dream.
Right.
So every time I go to a seminar, I'm like, I can't believe people are still coming. But now, like I told you, I literally, I sit over here in a pair of shorts and a nice shirt, and I'll hop into my studio right around the corner from my office. My office is in the house next door to my home. I have a room for an office, and one of the bedrooms is turned into a studio. And I'll literally come in here one day a month in a pair of shorts and a nice collared shirt. I'll hop in my studio. I'll whip out 6-7 hours of content in one day. I'm done for the month. I won't ever see anybody. It's all virtual. You know, for a guy who made his living crisscrossing the state and the country and, you know, some years putting 10, 12,000 miles on the truck between seminars and tournaments, who would have thought that I could literally walk 80 yards from my front door of my house to the front door of my office and sit down for 5 hours and create a whole month worth of business content? So it's definitely changed, and you've had to kind of figure it out as you go, right? You're always, just like the fishing, you're always changing. You know, you know your listeners want something different. You have to kind of change your format a little bit. You got different guests. You got different, and it's just been the same. And I think that's, for us that love this industry, the outdoor education, the outdoor industry, period, is a constant state of flux. You just get everything going, this is awesome. And after 2 years, people go, I don't want to do that anymore. You're like, what? This is great. And you got to figure out something else. So one of the frustrating parts about this is you cannot get complacent. You cannot get too happy with what you're doing, because that success is very fleeting. And you have to find the next thing, the next way, the next idea.
It is, you know, and I went back through some old, you know, some old things on the show and looked back at what we've done and what we could do better, which is a lot of things that we could do better. It's just because I'm not as hands-on in the studio like I used to be. I don't have the access in the studio like I used to, but that will be changing when it comes to, you know, getting new software and things like that for the computer. Then when I'm done on the road for the whole month of October, I'll be able to sit down in November and really start working on things and get ready for 2022, which we all hope is going to be better, but right now, we're looking at that wonderful time of October for fishing walleye.
Oh, baby. I told you this morning when you first talked to me, I've got my fall sniffles, and they come every year. Right about this time, I can pretty much tell you when September is over by my sinuses and the sacs underneath my eyes. We are there, which means it is time to start thinking about fall. I was sitting here this morning in my office before you called me. I'm actually putting together our October seminar content for our Teach the Fish and Anglers Club, and the title of the content is Trophy Fall Walleye Adjustments to Make to Catch More. And, you know, there are things you need to do different. Obviously, fall is a great time to catch big walleye no matter where they swim. I don't care if it's a small inland lake where you've got them planted, or maybe a reservoir, or obviously the Great Lakes, but any place you have walleye that you like to fish, fall is definitely the time to get out there and probably catch the fish of a lifetime. If you do it right, your biggest walleye, most of the large walleyes that are caught, believe it or not, more are caught in fall than they are caught in spring. So, you know, doing some things right, being in the right places, making some small adjustments, definitely makes a difference and can get you that, you know, the biggest fish in the system. You know, you may only have a 6-7 pound fish if you're fishing a small inland lake that's planted. A 6 or 7 pounder may be big, but when you're catching 15, 16 inches all year, 6 pounder is a big fish. So a lot of the biggest fish in the system, no matter where you fish, are caught this time of year, you know, from basically 1st of October through, you know, ice off with a big concentration kind of being Thanksgiving through, you know, the day we can't get on the water anymore.
Yeah, you know, and from what my good friend Andy Provenzano says, the weather guru from Channel 10 here in Lansing, we might have a bit of a winter this year. So, I mean, you know, get out while you can, because the niceties we are seeing may be ending before long, and things will take a drastic turn. But still, that, you know, that doesn't stop a lot of people, Lance.
Yeah, you know, we fished last year. You know, we put our boat in Saginaw Bay, had a good walleye fishing trip. I think January is either 5th or 6th. You know, we had a light freeze. We had a little bit of, you know, crusty ice or whatever you call it, shelf ice, whatever you want to call it. And we had 3 or 4 days, if you remember, early January, where it kind of got warm. We were able to put the Angler Quest in. We headed out to Saginaw Bay. They crushed a little bit of ice coming through the harbor, but got out. The water was open, and we caught, you know, we had a two-man limit, and we had a lot of fish that were, you know, 7, 8, 9 pounds. So
wow.
Don't put your boats away now for sure. And if you have the ability to keep your boat somewhere, you know, drop that lower unit when you get home, let the water drain out. You know, keep your batteries charged, keep the charger plugged in, and, you know, don't think that just because January, February, look at, I can't tell you how many years guys have fished the Saginaw River, you know, January, February, March, and never, ever had to stop. You know, the Detroit River has a great flow in it, so until you get icebergs in it, you could be catching, you know, there's a lot of 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 pound walleye in Detroit River, October, November, December, January, February, March. Those fish just don't automatically show up one day in April. Like, oh, it's 45 degrees, here come the fish. That's not how it works. They're in that river. A lot of them are in that river in October, November, December, January, February, March. They're there waiting to spawn. They're staging. And if you understand where they are and kind of how they act that time of year, you can catch the fish for a lifetime when most guys got their boats put away. So if you're a real angler and you really want a trophy walleye, please tell me you don't have your boat put away right now,
right?
Because you are missing the best 3 months of the season for catching that trophy walleye.
All right, Lance Valentine, teaching fishing on all the socials. Make sure you check him out. And there's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Dude, thank you so much for 15 years of friendship and education here on the show.
Congratulations, my friend. It's been a joy to be part of it. It's been a real joy watching you grow and be one of the best at your craft.
Thanks, man. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. It means a lot coming from you. We've got more coming your way on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host. for 15 years now on the Michigan Talk Network. Very happy to have you here. Thanks to Lance Valentine. Thanks to everybody that has been on this show over the past 15 years. I cannot believe we have gone this long, and the people that have helped bring us the show, Not Just Guns, our friends at Conquest Sense, United Deer Farmers of Michigan, and so many others along the way that have been a part of this, helping us grow to where we're at on the Michigan Talk Network and to podcast and all the things that, you know, all the places we have been. And I will be in for the next week. And next week, I will be in Mackinac City. So please look for me and I will look for you. The following week, I will be in Flint, Gaylord, and in Marquette, and then in Detroit for a week. So please, if you're out and about those areas, contact me via the email, outdoormailbag@gmail.com. I would love to hook up with you guys, meet you, maybe you know, I'll have some stuff with me to give away. You never know. Just contact me. Let me know where in those areas where you will be, and let's talk some outdoors. Can we please? We are getting ready. Bow season open October 1, and the day before that was our first show 15 years ago, and our good friend Tom Nelson, I remember the day he walked into my store when I had in Grand Led, said, "You know what? If you ever need somebody to talk about bow hunting, I'm your guy. Give me a call." And we're still doing it. Tom, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Duran. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely, man. 15 years, Tom.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing.
Where are we? I mean, so much has changed. And we were talking about Lance about this here in a little bit. Not only in the fishing industry, how we've learned along the way, but the archery industry has just changed dramatically. I mean, it was at this pinnacle here a few years ago, and then this is my opinion, and then things just kind of sloped off. I mean, we a lot more crossbow activity here in Michigan, and the industry itself seems to be, you know, a lot of the big guys swallowing up all the little guys.
Yeah, yep, exactly. There, you instead of being, you know, hundreds of small companies, privately owned and such, there's these investment groups, et cetera, and bigger archery companies have been buying up a lot of the smaller ones, and it's just not the same game anymore. And a lot fewer people controlling the industry. It's good, it's bad, but it is what it is. But on the bright note, the archery industry is thriving. It's doing well.
Yeah, that it is. And, you know, Tom, the other day I was up north, and I can't remember where I was exactly, someplace around Mount Pleasant. I walked into a garage sale, and this gentleman had antler racks all throughout his garage. He had a couple of turkeys, and he had a couple of bows in there. One was a 1951 Bear, one of the first laminated longbows, and they had another recurve in there, both signed by Fred, both with great stories. And man, wow, has that industry changed since he was in the business.
Oh, in leaps and bounds. I mean, you know, in some ways, Duran, I miss those old days. You know, I started bow hunting in the early to mid 70s there, 73, 74. I was actually out there with a bow chasing deer around, and had shot a bow previous to that for years, since I was about 7 years old. So I've had a bow in my hands almost my entire life. But, you know, those days back in the 70s, I'll refer back to, you know, again, simpler times. You know, everybody shot a stick bow just about. And if your pockets, you didn't take your hunting. And we had one choice in camo, you know, the old World War II pattern. Gosh, it was easy. But now, holy cow, it's very much changed. Technology has grown in leaps and bounds and changed the industry a hundredfold.
It has. And, you know, and to get those stories, because, you know, I brought you up about your days at Anderson when Fred would come in. He was just Fred. You knew who he was. You knew who he was in the industry. But looking back, it's like, you know, should I have taken more time? Should I have got more pictures? I mean, there's a lot of hindsight in that as well.
Yeah. And, you know, and going back to Fred, he just came across that personality as just another good old boy. You know, he's like a bow hunting buddy. He was not, there's absolutely no arrogance in that guy at all. I mean, he was just a people person, humble, one of the greatest individuals in the archery industry, or the greatest that I was ever blessed to really know. And again, he did so much for the sport, but a very humble guy. And just, you know, it'd be like you and I getting together, you know, have a conversation. He had time for the little guy. If you came up and approached him at a sports show or an event, he didn't. Yep. Okay. Nice to meet you and walk away. You know, he spent time with you, and he was just, again, a quality individual.
Yeah, and real quickly, I want to throw a quick shout-out to the gentleman by the name of Larry Dennis. Is the guy I met up in Weedman, Michigan, who had those bows and those great stories. And it's stuff like that, Tom. It's, you know, everybody you meet knows something you don't, and you learn from everyone if you take it that way. And Lord knows I've learned a ton from you, going from absolutely having never shot a deer in my life to my first and the only deer I've ever taken have been with a bow.
Yeah, which is a good thing to me. I love hearing that. So, but yeah, you've progressed immensely, in this today's day and age, you know, of all this information available at your fingertips, you know, via the internet and stuff, you can glean so much information in a hurry. You can go from a novice to a veteran bow hunter in a hurry, as far as knowledge wise, and which, instead of having to be out there and learning from the school of hard knocks like I did, just from trial and error, you get a real jump start as far as an education in the outdoors, I guess I would say.
Absolutely. Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel, joining me. And Tom, you guys have pretty much hit a milestone with your show. You're the longest running show on the Outdoor Channel, if I am correct. And how many years is that now?
You know, we celebrated our 25th year on the Outdoor Channel here back in July. Hard to believe.
25 years. That's absolutely incredible. Honestly.
And I remember as if it was the other day telling my wife when I first started the show, I said, Beth, wouldn't this be great if this lasted like 5 years, if I could do this for like 5 years? And here we are 25 years later, and I'm getting older and slower, but it's still trugging along, and I've been very blessed, Duran, very blessed that it's lasted this long, and what a great ride it's been.
You know what, and that's so good to hear, because you hear people complain about their jobs, and I don't think I could ever complain about doing this. And has it really ever gotten to be like work, Tom?
The only time, Duran, is been the few times when the schedule is real tight, like when we were bouncing from camp to camp. You know, you'd come home, change your underwear, and leave again, and you know, you just miss family and gone a lot. There were times like that during those periods that was like, holy cow, I just can't do this anymore. But I've learned through those trials and tribulations to take a little break between hunts, and now I look at each one every time we hit the road like it's another opening day, you know. And so it's been good. And the people, you know, hunting, the chance to hunt in all these different countries and states and provinces has been fantastic. But I really feel blessed, most of all, the amount of friends and the individuals I've met, the quality people in the experience. I mean, I put a lot of value, more value on the individuals I've met and that have become friends than on the trophies I've acquired.
Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer, joining us here on Wild Michigan. Tom, is there a place or two that you still have yet to go, that, or an animal you want to take?
Oh, absolutely. And it's probably a fairly long list. But on my bucket list, Duran, before I call it good, there's one animal that, and one hunt in particular, that I want to do and will do while I'm physically able, and that is a brown bear hunt with my bow and arrow in Alaska. I've had numerous friends do it, and I should have already done it, but it's on my list. A giant brown bear up close, personal, with my bow and arrow.
All right, Tom Nelson joining us on the Wild Michigan, Michigan Talk Network.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. thanks to everybody, whether it's been with us 15 minutes, 15 years, whatever the case, man. Thank you so much for being a part of this show. And don't forget to, when you hit the stores, look in for that scent. Make sure it's Conquest Scents in a stick. Evercalm, Rutting Buck, VS1. Maybe you're using the scent fire, the vaping scents. Man, there's so much good stuff, and I'm going to be hanging out. Doug doesn't know it yet, but I'm coming to visit him the next couple weeks over there in Davidson, Michigan, on their farm with Kim and Karen and everybody over there. They do a phenomenal job, the scrape maker, all of that great stuff. Excellent tools for your arsenal for the bow and the gun season for white-tailed deer here in Michigan or wherever you're hunting. Good friend Tom Nelson joining us right now, host of the American Archer, 25 years on the Outdoor Channel. Tom has been there for all of them, and he has been here all 15 with us on this show. And Tom, here we go. We have opening weekend upon us. We are now in deer season in Michigan for the bow hunter. And you know, the one thing that I want to talk to you about is we may have bow hunted for 40 years, but every first draw on a whitetail is just like a first draw. The adrenaline's going, your heart's racing, your breathing changes, and you know, and with these fast bows, we miss a lot faster too sometimes. So how do you mentally gear yourself up for this? Because you know it's a surprise every time.
Yeah, you know, and it's really tough to, you said gear yourself up for it. It's hard to acclimate yourself and get and prepare yourself for that initial shot. And I'll just throw this out there as an example. I was blessed last year on opening day to take a pretty doggone good buck here in Michigan. And I was sitting up in my tree stand more relaxing than anything. It was a opening morning, a beautiful morning. And when this buck started to come through the woods, and I threw the glasses up and checking on my bow, that's a shooter. And I actually got rattled. And I'm proud to say that, because I still get that adrenaline rush when, you know, especially when I see a deer that I'm going to shoot. You know, if I'm just looking at them, that's one thing. But if I decide, okay, that's a shooter, I go into this autopilot of, okay, here we go. And I was shook up. It was exciting. And making that shot under those conditions can be tough. And, you know, so I always tell people, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, getting excited and getting the shakes. That's what we go out there for and stuff. But one of the things that I do, you know, and I like to recommend is to prepare yourself for that, because there's not much you can do. You can say all you want and tell people to do this and that, but it's hard when that shot is presented and, you know, you've been waiting a year for it or 2 years, who knows, or maybe a lifetime, and then it's there to draw back that bow, aim and follow through with that shot and make a good shot. So I highly recommend it. I do this myself from about the week before, 2 weeks before bow season, right through bow season, and that's one arrow practice. I'll go out, I'll take one arrow, tell myself mentally, okay, this is it. This is the only shot you're going to get this bow season. Make it count. No warming up. You know, no warming up, because when you're in that tree stand and you've been sitting for an hour or two and that buck comes walking by, you don't have a chance. I'm going to take a couple practice shots, make sure I'm on. No, you don't. You got to make it count. So I'll take that arrow, mentally tell myself, this is it. There's your buck of a lifetime, and shoot. No matter where that arrow goes, I pull it out of the target and put it away until the next time I walk by. It might be hours later, might be the next day. But just that one arrow practice really, really helps. It makes you concentrate more. You don't think about warming up and such. So again, when that deer presents itself, or bear, or whatever you're hunting, and you get a shot, I really believe you're a little bit more prepared. So, and I'm a big fan of doing whatever I can to increase my odds.
Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer, joining us here on Wild Michigan. Tom, you said the three words that come out of my mouth every time I'm in the tree stand and I see movement and I see a deer. It's, here we go. And I thought it was just me, but apparently it's not just me. It's everybody uses the same words.
Yeah. Yep. I think everybody just about does, because you do. You just, you know, it's like you put that game face on. And again, it's different if I'm up there and, okay, there's some does, or there's a buck I'm not interested in. It's great. Throw up the binoculars, look at them, have fun and stuff, and don't even stand up sometimes. But when you see that animal that, you know, okay, that's what I'm looking for, everything changes. Heartbeat increases. Maybe your legs start shaking a little bit. And that's, I pray that that never leaves me, because it's just, to me, that's what it's all about, that heart-pounding, knee-jerking reaction, you know, when you know that it's going to happen, or your chances in front of you. And you got to draw that bow back, and you got to hold that pin steady, and you got to make that release count, and, you know, and all you know, that shot, as I said, might be the only shot you get all year, and by gosh, you got to make it count. That's why it's so important that we practice. I can't stress that enough. You know, practice all summer. Be prepared.
Tom Nelson, our guest here on Wild Michigan. Tom, you know, we get on ourselves, you know, about practice and stuff, you know, and the thing about bow hunting is there's so much of us in archery itself. When you're hunting with a vertical bow, there's no recoil, there's no flinching, anticipating the trigger pull. Everything has to be still and fluid throughout the whole motion from start to actual loose of the arrow.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole process to that shot. Well, let's call it a shot process that you're about to take. And if you fail in any of them, that could mean the difference between hitting and missing, or wounding and killing. I mean, it's just, you've got to almost, like, it'd be great if you had a checklist you take the time to run through when you're going through that shot process, but you can't. And that's why practice is important, so that it's natural, so you don't have to run through it, so that you know what to do. You know, you've done it so many times before. It's like riding a bike or throwing a football. You just, you know what to do.
Tom, can you think of something from within the past 15 years that has been like the game changer for you? I mean, a broadhead, an arrow, sights, something that, you know, I mean, you've been through a lot of products, man, a lot of different sponsorships. Is there something that, I mean, you still look at today that's probably one of the most important tools in your arsenal when you go out?
You know, I as far as bow hunting goes, Duran, you know, I'm probably a simpler type guy, as far as I don't carry a lot of gear with me and stuff. And I like the simplicity of, you know, if it doesn't fit in my pockets, I don't take it. But that's not so true, because I do carry a day pass like everybody. But for me, and especially, Duran, as I get older and stuff, I would say the next to my bow and arrow, to me, the next most important piece of equipment is probably my rangefinder, my laser rangefinder. Because with what I do, I might be in Nebraska hunting one week, Montana the next, and I'm not in stands or in places where I'm familiar with, okay, it's 32 yards to the big oak over there, or things. And I would say 90% of my misses in my career, and there's been a lot of them, I'm not embarrassed to say I've missed my share of animals and such, but I would say 90% of them haven't been errant shots because I had a bad release or dropped my bow arm. It's been because I misjudged the yardage. And with a rangefinder now, you know, click, snap, okay, 14 yards, 42 yards, 27 yards. And when you know the yardage, you know where to shoot, you know, it makes such a difference. And I don't always range the animal. If I'm in a new stand hunting in a place I haven't been before, I range this rock over here, the fence is this far, and quickly, you know, I know what the different yardages are where the deer should come, and so I don't have to guesstimate how far it is. And as I get older, it's come more and more into play. I used to pride myself on my ability to judge distance offhand, and I'm not quite as good as I used to be, but I still get it done. But there's no excuse with the rangefinder. Now I don't have any problem.
Tom Nelson, the American Archer, joining us here on Wild Michigan. And Tom, I don't know if that would have been the first thing I would have thought of, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know why that never even came to mind. But then again, I'm hunting the same place a lot. You know, I'm not all over the place.
Yeah.
But I can see
me,
that.
It might for everybody, but for me personally, that's probably been the most important new piece of gear, again, besides my bow and such that I've been using. Because I was a successful bow hunter 20 years ago with antiquated equipment compared to what's available now.
Sure.
But I still missed. I still got her done.
Speed of sound, speed of smell, doesn't matter how fast, you can still miss. Tom Nelson, Thank you so much for joining us, man, and thank you for your continued friendship. as it's been a fantastic ride with you and Beth and Sarah and oh, that kid husband of hers, Jake. all good people, man.
Everybody be safe this fall.
Absolutely. Strap in that tree harness or make sure you got that PFD on the boat, whatever you're doing. Get out in the Michigan woods and water. Go hunting, fishing. Take the kids with you. Please educate them to the future of outdoor sports. I'll see you all next hour on Wild Michigan.